hype men.
Yeah!
Ladies and gentlemen, it is another hype Wednesday. Men. You are back for another week of hype men. We are We are the top 10 rated Rolling Stone comedy podcast that you listen to weekly.
That means that people listen to 10, like, just total, right?
Yeah, that's all anyone listens to. It's only the 10. That's it. After the 10, no one listens to anything. So we're so happy to be on that list, or else no one would listen to us.
Yeah, it's true.
This is a very important episode for us.
I'd just like to say this might be my favorite one so far.
Really? Oh, just from the start? Just from my intro?
I would say just from the star.
Wow, that's amazing. Yes. I feel like I'm the reason that you love it so much.
Well, that goes unsaid.
Or the reason is because we have a theme song this week produced by Clinton Sparks, which is a DJ, a producer, a television personality. He found time between creating his solo record.
He's everything to us, really.
He is. He's everything. He's working on a solo record. He shows up on E, and he did our theme music, which is awesome.
Guess what?
What?
It's not true.
It's not true, no.
Oh, shit. It's the same gimmick every week. I fall for it every week.
Fooled again.
I fall for it. This is Greg Mayo who did it.
Yes.
Our engineer who's helping us out. Skyping. We're doing another Skyped episode.
Yes.
I am on the West Coast.
This, by the way, this is a first, because while Jensen's on the West Coast and Jeff and I are in New York, we have the king, the real king of the South. Let's be honest here. The real king of the South. Yeah. Bun B is with us.
The legend Bun B.
UGK for life.
That's right. Yo. What's happening, Bun?
I'm chilling, man. This is crazy because, like, I have both of y'all on Skype. So when Jeff talks, like, the little icon, like, flashes. And Carl talks, the other one flashes.
Bun B, the official first person on the podcast to call me Carl.
That's right.
I have to acknowledge you as Carl. I'm sorry. We're going to move past this and reference you as Jensen from this point forward.
No, that's fair.
I had to acknowledge that because it's very interesting that I'm actually talking to you because you were not a real person for a very long time.
Don't worry. I wasn't during that period either. So I understand where your feeling was. Wait, so it was so crazy for me to even hear that you knew the Hot Carl shit legend. I was surprised to even know that you heard of my failure. How did you know about my record? How did you know about that?
Well, UGK, we were students of deals because we had like a shitty deal.
Right.
So if somebody had like a good deal, like we would make a note of it. And all the deals we had ever heard of, like the deal that supposedly this kid, Hot Carl, had gotten was like the greatest deal with like all the money in the world. And everybody was going to produce on this album and everybody was featuring on it. And I just couldn't, nobody could believe. And it just kept getting big and bigger. Like, oh yeah, he's got a trick by RZA. He's getting a track by Kanye. Like, who the fuck is this dude?
Right, right.
All of that was true, by the way, right, Jensen?
Yeah, that was true. You could thank DJ Mormil, Jimmy Iovine's nephew, who it was his first record, and Jimmy obviously either liked the music or just wanted DJ to succeed, so he just kept saying, more money, please. More money, please. I mean, I never got a no, so I lived off it, you know?
That shit was ridiculous. And then the album never released, so that made it even more of a myth.
Yeah, no, it was a pretty crazy story. I mean, and then EMI gave me a deal that was, you know, even equally as stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it was. I like to pretend that I wasn't trying to release albums and I was just raping the industry.
You did a good job.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Out of all of us that toiled so hard in the midst of shitty deals, you just walk away with all the money.
I did. But who else did you study as far as deals? Do you remember anyone else?
I remember we would talk about E-40's deal a lot.
Great,
the hieroglyphics deal we thought was incredible.
Oh, I didn't know that. What was that? Do you know what
the? Well, they just had like, you know, they were able to, instead of just shooting videos based on, you know, the label picking, you know, say here's your pick of directors or whatever. They were able to just apprehend the video budget and go out and shoot things independently. That's why you saw a lot of the 93 Chillin' Vinny videos.
Right.
Where they basically just took a trip to Hawaii and filmed the trip and then came back and edited it. And maybe three videos, which, you know, I was like, damn, why can't we do that?
Yeah.
But our deal went from bad to worse. So
There's a kid now, Bun, who I've heard has a, well, I mean, other than the Odd Future deal, which just went through, which is incredible. But I did hear that there's a kid at Interscope named Machine Gun Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Who I guess basically they're even calling the Hot Carl deal.
Is that right?
Yeah, I've heard.
I'm on that album, actually.
Are you?
Okay, good. Yeah.
I'm pretty much on, I think, I think it's required that I'm on 4 out of 5 rap albums.
Honestly.
Yeah, and by the way, Bun, I know you're friends with like every single rapper, but that's not going to cut it today. You have to talk shit about everybody.
Including Rampage, the last Boy
Scout. Oh, no. Do you still talk to Rampage?
He's on Twitter now, so every now and then, but you know.
Adam or Dap him.
You know, I'm cool with everybody.
Yeah. Okay. Well, as you know, Rampage has been my punching bag.
Yeah. You guys, I think ritualistically tear him to pieces on this, you know, and that's just what you guys do, you know, which I didn't notice was a comedy. I thought it was a music podcast.
There you go.
I realize this is a comedy podcast. So, now I don't take everything I hear so seriously.
Thank you. Well, to be honest, we didn't know it was comedy.
That's right.
Rolling Stone told us.
Before we move on, Jeff and I just wanted to, because I don't think we ever formally... really thanked you enough, Bun, because you have made It's the Real into what it is, was, and will be, because you were the first big personality, star, rapper, everything, celebrity, to be involved with It's the Real.
I don't believe that.
It's true. You called us one morning through Theta Sandiford and said first time, long time, which was amazing to hear. And you definitely were our first big guest on our video show.
I did not know that. I was just a fan of the show. I had no idea I blew y'all up like that.
No, and we appreciate it. And by the way, when Jeff and I rolled into the conference room at that PR firm, Bun's first words were to us, because we were wearing suits. He's like, "What are you, my accountants?"
Yeah.
Jew joke.
No, Jew joke.
Also because it's Jewish, yeah.
Right.
Don't forget to tip your waitress.
That's right.
That's true. But you would think you have a beautiful Jewish name, Bun B. Bernard. Kind of a...
Really?
Yeah, I mean, my uncle's named Bernard.
What does your uncle do for a living?
He's a rapper.
He's retired. Yeah,
he's a rapper. His last name is Freeman.
My uncle's Rampage. Bernard, he's retired now. He was a salesman. He was a schmata business. He was a clothing.
By the way, Jensen, did you see that Andy Milonakis has the best nickname for Bun ever?
What is it?
Crocodile Bun B.
Milonakis got away. I gave it. Yeah, I saw him at South by Southwest. I'm like, I'm gonna give it to you. I've heard a lot of them. True Clinton,
right.
All that kind of stuff. I like that one.
Really, really funny.
That is really great.
And then somebody tried to take it. Somebody tried to tweet it. I was like, nah, that's Andy Stone. Fall back. Like, they really thought they made up some shit. I was like, no, not really.
All right. So these days, in addition to rapping, you are a professor at Rice University.
Yeah, not too shabby a gig, right?
It's not too fucking shabby.
I think actually they're one of the top 10 in the U.S. News and World Reports.
Is that right?
Yeah, they're up there.
Absolutely.
Wow. But
well, they are now.
No. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Since you came aboard.
Yeah.
And I know I read somewhere that you made it explicitly clear before you started the class that it was not going to be a place for people to drop off their demos, right?
Right.
Now, how does that hold up over the course of the semester? Because Jeff and I walk around New York City and we're nobodies, right? And we still get all these people coming up to us who can do nothing for them. They give us their demos. How do you avoid getting actual records before, after, or during class?
Well, Rice University is a different university. It's not a lot of the typical people that you see in hip hop walking around the Rice University campus.
Right.
But what I will say is that my students were very respectful. I mean, they did not come just to see if, you know, I was going to be in class rapping or whatever. They had a real genuine interest in wanting to know about hip hop and the culture and everything. And, you know, they gave themselves over to the process. You know, I only had maybe one question on the first day about anything rap related, and that was a guy asking if I was going to be taking demos at all, and I was like, yeah, you can turn your demo in with the final exam.
Wow.
And from that point on, we never even had an issue in the classroom. And then, you know, not to toot my own horn, pause, but I don't have a problem with intimidation, you know? And I say, if I tell somebody, look, we're not doing that in here, I think they get it, you know. I don't have to repeat myself.
And who are you teaching the class with?
Dr. Anthony Penn. He's the head of the religious studies department and the humanities department at Rice University. He's the most tenured black professor at Rice University. And, you know, he's very well respected within the religious community.
And he approached you how?
Say again?
I said, how did he approach you?
Cautiously. No. they you know, they invited me to come and be a guest speaker at the course 2 years ago. And after that, and even before the class, we talked about a lot of different things. And he would come by a couple of different events every now and then. The university sponsored some hip hop events that I attended. As we got to know each other, you know, we realized we had a lot in common, and we kind of thought about a lot of different things the same way. And they approached me about if I was interested in actually co-teaching the course. They thought it'd be an incredible opportunity. And shit, I did too, you know. You know, I just wanted to make sure I could do it right. But, you know, once I got over that initial hesitance, it was all good.
That's awesome.
I took Todd Boyd's class at USC, which ended up being one of the first ones, one of the first history of hip hop classes. Right. And he also wrote The Woods, I think, the movie called The Woods. But he's done a lot. He's always the guy on CNN when they have to have, like, you know, expert hip hop professors.
Right.
But it's crazy because he said so much just wild shit in class that just necessarily could never be true.
Like what?
He hates Eminem, hated Eminem. And I'm not.
Did he work obviously. For The Source?
Yeah. My teacher was Benzino.
Right.
No, but Todd Boyd hated Eminem, said he didn't like him. And then at one point in the class claimed that everyone in D12 was a better rapper than Eminem.
Yes, Bizarre is known for his
his lyricism.
His cover.
What did he base that on?
I was so fed up with him at that time. I corrected him once in class, which was a major mistake.
Really? What'd you say?
I totally fucked up. He said, they were talking about sample laws, and he said that Bismarckie Just a Friend was the precedence for sample laws. And I was like, oh God, I want to correct him so bad, but I don't know if this is going to be bad. And then I raised my hand. I was like, you know, the song's actually Spring Again. It's not... Just a Friend wasn't the sample right. Problems came from Spring Again, and he just stared at me. Stared.
Was it a well attended class, Jensen?
Yeah, oh my God, yeah, it was full. I mean, he would wear, you know, he would wear pimp suits to class every day, and he would come down to like a different Outkast song.
Really?
I mean, he was very dramatic. That's what he's known for.
Bun,
yeah,
is that what you do?
What did you say he did?
He would dress up in suits and matching. He would wear alligator shoes. He had a gimmick, you know. It was covered by CNN. One of our classes. It's funny too.
Yeah. So this dude was a fucking fruitcake.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you can say it. He wrote Basketball Jones. He wrote some books that I still.
Shit, read. Dude, he came in class with a pimp suit on.
Yeah, he did. And then
what the fuck does a pimp suit and gay alligator shoes got to do with the history of hip hop?
I agree. I mean, he would tell you that it has to do with it have to do with Dolemite. It would have to do with Slim,
nothing to do with him walking into class with a fucking pimp suit on.
I would agree. And he'd come out to Outkast songs. I mean, and he also said that, you know, like I said, D12. He also, a kid asked why Jay-Z had his name. He said he didn't know. So I said Jazz was, and it was all bad. I should have never said anything. And then exactly. And then near the end of class, he asked me to come to office hours. And I was like, oh shit, I'm screwed. No. Yeah, I was screwed. And then I went in and he was like, I heard you got this deal at Interscope. Can you play me some things?
Are you serious?
And, yeah. So I played him a song and he didn't like it. And, he said, well, there's another guy they signed, right? And I said, yeah, he's a Bubba Sparks. And he goes, I don't like him either. And I said, well, I'm seeing a trend here. And it was just silent again. And it was a very weird class for me, but I did get 100%. So,
Bubba is now working at Interscope. Is that right? Yeah.
He's Polo's A&R, right?
Yeah, I think Bubba, so.
He just dropped some shit a couple of months ago.
Really? I heard he's also A&Ring for Polo, head of A&R.
Oh, over at Zone 4?
Yeah, Zone 4, yeah.
Some numbers.
I don't know. I'm a Zone 6 guy.
I don't fuck with anything under 8.
Mr. Zone 6?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to go ahead and smoke here, fella.
All good, right. Good. No, we're in. Okay, so Bun, I feel like you've done so many podcasts where you just go over things that have happened in your career. I want to just sort of pick and choose shit. Are you guys, Jeff and Eric, are you cool with that?
Yeah, totally.
I don't give a shit.
Fine.
You weren't asking me
asking Jeff and Eric. You have nothing. You're here with Hawk Carl, Bun. You know what I mean? You have no say over what. Five mics, man.
Amazing.
I mean, incredible. I mean, this is something.
I've never been more hated on in my life.
I mean, listen, The Source has been more hated on in our life, so don't worry. But yeah, right. But I love the album. I love it. I mean, was it something that you were warned it was going to get five mics, or were you just, I mean, was it just like, holy shit?
I was told that I was going to be in the running, but then like when they told me I was up against like, you know, Cuban Links 2 and, you know, Things Fall Apart and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention Drake. I was like, okay, well, whatever. It's a good thing to be mentioned, you know?
Yeah.
And then I fuck around and won the thing. And I was like, wow, this is incredible.
Yeah.
And then like the fans of all the other groups and individuals that lost, like, attacked me mercilessly. It was really bad. I really had not been a approached with that level of animosity before from, that, you know, people within the music scene. And I almost took it a certain way, but then I had to kind of look at the odds, you know what I'm saying? Like, the odds were against me as far as I was concerned.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Not by the artist, but just basically, if you compete against seven people and say each person has 10 people that support them, if I win, then the 10 people support me, stand up and applaud, and the other 60 people that whose people didn't win stand up and boo, and that's what you're going to hear. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And yeah. Does, I mean, and honestly, I mean, I don't mean to get, you know, like too emotional, but I mean, does that stuff bother you? I mean, you know, this is Bun B, UGK. I mean, to hear that maybe some of this stuff would have got to you a little bit for a little bit would be important for maybe new artists to hear.
Well, no, it's just not so much that it would bother me. I was just like, wow, people really feel this kind of a way about Five Mics. You know what I'm saying? Like, to the point to, you know, I had to look at it like, even if, say, you like Bun B at 9.9, you know, 99.9%.
Yeah.
But then Fat Joe is your number one guy at 100. And if you're in an argument, you got to go with your 100, even if you got to shit on your 99.9.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's just a rule of art. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, believe me, if anybody's built to be hated on, it's the Trilogy. Now, I would love for young dudes to think I'm sentimental or I'm sensitive. Please. For God's sakes, please.
I like to think you just sit at home and listen to Aretha Franklin records and Connor Oppst and just talk about emotions with your friend.
I listen to Sharon Jones and Vampire Weekend.
Both good records. Yeah, are the you're the king of getting retweeted on Twitter for talking about bands and music we don't think you like, which I tend to think has like tinge of racism in it, because people are so shocked when you say you love Vampire Weekend. I'm not shocked at all. You both make fucking great music.
I'm quoted on Vampire Weekend. People don't know. I'm quoted on I think Cousins.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, is that the second album?
There's a line in there where he says on the street where you're scared to park on at night. Oh. It's like the fourth line in the first verse. Right.
That's so funny.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, but, you know, good guys. We're both mutual fans of each other. People would not know that type of shit, though. And, you know, I grew into music when there was more, you know, before hip hop, I fell in love with music. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if you love music, you had to be into a lot of different shit. Specifically, when cable came around and MTV, if you went into music, then you had to be open to shit. So, you know, in the midst of them playing Billie Jean one time, I had to watch Rod Stewart 8 times and Joe Jackson stepping out and shit like that 12 times. I used to watch Friday Night Videos on USA and
that show, by the way. I love that show.
Because that shit would be on like all fucking night.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I was a latchkey kid, so I would just come home. My mom would be working late, and I'd just sit up and watch that type of shit all night. So Duran Duran Rio and shit like that.
I would watch Dance Party USA. I don't know do you remember that?
I remember, but we didn't get it.
Oh, God damn. It was so good. There was like a girl named Princess because she loved Prince. I mean, I like learned how to watch the video hoe through Dance Party USA.
Oh, see, that's I grew up with iDallas.
iDallas.
Yeah, you're a little later than us.
Damn.
Yeah,
I grew up with iDallas.
In the term that he grew up with her, not technically, right?
No, right.
I may have started to get jaded around that time.
Yeah, I don't think Jeff and Eric in upstate New York were growing up with anyone named iDallas.
If you're jaded by that point, what'd you think when MTV came around in like 2005 saying like, you remember, because they went on those swings, they're like, oh, you know, because I guess this is after Kanye had popped off, and they were like, oh, okay, so now Chicago is the place to be. Then they went down to Miami, and they're like, Miami's the place to be. Then they went down to Texas, and they're like, hey, brand new artist down in Texas. And they're like, I mean, did you sort of raise your hand and be like, so, I mean, I've been around for a while. Why are you just coming down here to sort of get on Mike Jones' jock?
No, not at all, man. You have to be appreciative of the fact that they even want to acknowledge the city as a whole. I mean, that's kind of what we did this shit for. You know, I didn't even think I'd still be here. You know what I'm saying? I thought that I would be kind of like watching from the sidelines at this point as the next generation would be coming through doing their thing. Mm. And I could be like, yeah, you know, see that kid? That kid wouldn't be here if it wasn't for me and all that type of shit.
Yeah.
But I'm still actively a part of the scene. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
so I don't regret
anything
because statistically, I'm not even supposed to be here.
No, I mean, more than statistically, a roaring majority says you're not supposed to be here, which kind of leads me to my next question, which is, you are one of the rappers, actually, I'd say probably one of the only rappers who is correctly bridging the gap of social media, of the idea of something like It's the Real. You were the first people to contact them. You are obviously on the pulse of what's going on in hip hop, while a lot of people in your era, in your the years that you first came out with UGK, are just left behind and sound bitter. I mean, what is it? You know, what is it in you? What do you?
Yeah, what
was that a conscious decision? Was that a conscious decision to sort of be up on the times?
What separates from Nas?
Yes and no. Like, I think the main reason that I'm still here is because I don't take a lot of shit personally, which a lot of people from my generation do. and even the people before me. You know what I'm saying? And I watched the bitterness of the generation before me when we came into the game. And not, I don't mean necessarily from my region, because in the South, we've always had a bit of love. But I watched hip hop on the East Coast in certain instances be a little standoffish.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Say moving from the Juice Crew era into, say, the Rough Rider era. I didn't see a lot of giving back and forth. You know what I'm saying? Not overtly. You would see certain instances, but it wasn't overt. So for us, we felt obligated to make sure to constantly give reference to people that inspired us, because we knew at the end of the day, sometimes that's all those dudes got. I remember specifically on the Super Tight album, we gave a shout out to Fishbone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we met Fish in Atlanta. Fish was like, yo, we've been doing music for 14 years at that time. He said, we've worked with everybody in the game, you know, Red Hot Chili Peppers, you name it. They worked with everybody. Said nobody had ever gave him a shout out on their liner notes. And we had never even recorded with him. We just met him, knew of him, you know, loved their stuff. You know what I'm saying? And just shouted him out on the album. They said no one had ever given him any credit. So for some people, that shit goes a long way.
I totally understand. I remember on the Roots record, a recent Roots, probably like two or three ago, they have a song where they just yell out names at the end of it. It just like shouts to these people, and it's mostly pioneers. And the last one they say is Justin Warfield.
Mm.
Wow. And I was always like, what a crazy, you know, and I remember talking to Justin about it, and he was like, I was just as shocked by it. But it is, you forget these guys. I mean, Justin's went on to be successful with She Wants Revenge and other things.
You know, who Justin is.
Yeah, Justin Warfield was...
I know Justin Warfield and the whole Divine Style of that whole era, you know what I'm saying, of hip-hop.
Yeah, that, you know, that's where I came up, right? Do you know that?
No, really? You came
up? Yeah, I was managed by Donald D.
Oh, that's some ball of shit.
Yeah, I was. When I was 12 years old, I was managed by Donald D. And so, like, people like Justin, who was really the first college rapper, he was the first college radio rapper, the first, I guess, they had the shitty title of, like, acid rapper. It was just a shitty name, but he had worked with Quincy Jones, and he had worked with QT3, and he had worked with... Prince Paul. I mean, there were people he was working with. It was just epic. And then he got out of rap. And then, but he was super influential in someone like The Roots, where it's, you know, a college focused rapper.
Yeah.
Talking about sort of hippie stuff at the time. And now he's went on to be in the band She Wants Revenge. Completely different music, completely different stuff. We hope to have him on the podcast soon. But, you know, Justin's a good example of another person who's kind of moved with the times. I know he's a huge Odd Future fan, so he understands sort of what's coming up now. But, you know, to have an unjaded, unbitter rapper like you, Bun, it's super rare.
I'm blessed, man. I mean, how can I complain? Like, I still have an active career. I still get to move around and do shows, entertain people. I'm still accepted. I still work hard at what I do also. You know what I'm saying? Like, at the end of the day, I still want to be looked at as a great rapper. And as long as I'm still rapping, I have to achieve for greatness. I don't sit around and say, oh, yeah, well, you know, I wrote a hard ass rhyme in 98 or I went hard on so and so in 2002. Like, who really gives a shit at the end of the day about all of that shit? Like, what the fuck can you do right now? That's all people are concerned about, specifically the music community nowadays. You know what I'm saying? It's so easy for somebody to download you, put you in iTunes, and then go on to the next song. And as soon as their folders and shit gets full, you just get deleted in a mass swipe. You know what I'm saying?
That's how Jeff lives.
That's right.
Yes.
That's how Jeff lives with Young Jock.
How does something like a DJ Khaled song where they feature, you know, 8 or 10 people on it come together? Does he just send you the beat specifically knowing that he wants you on it, or how does that come to be where you're, you know, on the same song as Waka and Luda and even Khaled 18 rapping.
Other people.
And that's in that instance, that I'm the only reason I'm on that record is because I got tired of not being on those records. Like, yo, you get everybody in the world on these fucking records. I ain't never been on these records. You talking about hood shit. How the fuck can you not have Bun B on these hood records? So for the new album, he called me and say, yo, OG, I'm bringing you in for the remix. Welcome to my hood. I'm like, good enough for me. Maybe if I go off on this like Luda, you'll put me on the original record next time.
Yeah.
But nah, you know, not to just give away anybody's process or whatever, but you know, he calls me up, he lets me know what he wants me to be a part of. And these things are not random by Khaled. Khaled envisions it. You know what I'm saying? So
when
he
says
he wants to be on a song, there has to be a certain balance of people.
And by the way,
on the record.
And by the way, he lives what he's talking about. You know, in 2007, they had the UGK album was a double album. I don't know if Jeff and Eric.
Yep.
This might go back too far. Okay.
No. Yeah. Too far. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. This might go back too far for Jeff and Eric.
I think it was 22 then.
Yeah. Here's the thing about him. This is someone who had, these are some of the guests on this album that I just looked up because I remember how crazy this is. Talib Kweli.
Yes.
Okay. Then you have a young Rick Ross.
Yes.
On the record.
Yeah.
Too short. 3-6 Mafia, Slim Thug, Outkast. Then Kool G Rap, Big Daddy Kane.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Dizzy Rascal. I mean, and I don't mean to be, you know, praising him so close to him, but this is someone who would be able to reach back and show who's new in the scene. I mean, it's kind of epic in a sense that you don't have anyone else doing that.
That album was our first opportunity to really exploit the record company, you know what I'm saying? Just to be frank, we had never really had a crazy budget where they were just like, whatever we want to do. And with Pim coming home and, you know, UGK in a sense being even bigger than it was when he went to jail as far as notoriety.
Yeah.
You know, they opened the coffers and like, you know, whatever it is you guys want, let's do it. And so for us, we were like, you know what? Let's do records with people that we want to do records. Doesn't matter about what's going to be big or what's going to be hot. Let's do records with people that we want to do records with, that we can finally do music with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the point where, like, you know, bringing in Dizzy, who was a good friend of mine, you know what I'm saying? Really wanting to try to give him an opportunity to, you know, express himself to American audiences, which I don't think UGK may have been the best way. But, you know, and just, you know, really people like Quali, you know what I'm saying? Who I think, you know, people that only really had a skewed perception of who he was and how well-rounded and how knowledgeable an individual he was in my region. You know what I'm saying? I wanted to just try to open up the door, even with the point of doing the Swiss Beat song.
Yeah.
You know, Pimp was like, man, I want you to rap on one of these big-ass beats everybody else rap on, man. I'm not going to tie up the whole album, man. We're going to go get us a Swiss Beat track like everybody else get. Nigga, and just rap like a motherfucker on it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And just as he's like, man, I want us to finally feel like rappers, man. You know, we ain't never really felt like rappers in the game. Which was true. Every time we recorded an album, it was under some kind of legal tension, breaking up with management, shit in the street. You know, after like 12 years and 4 years, you know, 12 years of being in the industry, when we Pimp, 4 years of being in prison, he was finally able to just relax and just make an album and just do music, you know?
Yeah.
And it paid off. The album ended up debuting number one on the Billboard 200.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that also got nominated for a Grammy, correct?
Well, the single.
Single. Well, I mean, international players, right?
Yeah. Which I saw a video from some show recently where you just let the whole crowd sing Pimp's part, right?
That was at South by Southwest.
Exactly.
And it was awesome. They pulled the sound on us. But, you know, I mean, it's anytime I need, you know, some help with a Pimp C song, the crowd is more than welcome. You know, they are more than welcome to help me.
I feel like you lost, obviously, a member of your group. But at those shows I've seen, it's almost like you've gained 4,000 new ones every time. It's like
the connection that people have with Pimp C is incredible. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I didn't really understand it, and you know how much of a hold he had with people until he went to jail, and it, you know, the Free Pimp C campaign came about.
The hats,
and
just so the many shirts, people. Yeah.
Which, by the way, Eric, the first time he heard Free Pimp C,
thought it was Free Pepsi.
Wait, no, that's
Then he ran to it.
No, I was I might have heard like Paul Wall or somebody on a mixtape shout it, and I was like, "What is Free Pepsi?" I was way wrong.
No, it was crazy. It got all the way up to we did Jimmy Kimmel.
Yes.
And in between breaks, I had the Free Pimp C shirt on. He was like, "What is that?" And I was like, "This is my brother. He's in prison. You know, he's getting ready to come home soon." And we're just trying to, you know, let people know, you know, not to forget about him. He's like, wow, how long has he been in prison? I'm like, 2.5 years. He'd probably come home in about a year. So it's like, and you just been wearing these shirts for 2.5 years? I'm like, yeah, pretty much every day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's pretty cool. And it came back from commercial. He was like, thank everybody for coming out. Gonna be, because I was performing with Paul Wall that night, John Cena. And he was like, and by the way, Free Pimp C. And it was just blew my mind.
Mm. That's awesome.
That is pretty awesome. I want to get into something that might be talked about a lot by you, but I think I haven't heard it, so I kind of want to get out on the podcast, obviously. But how does a song that I absolutely adore, and I know it's a single, so I sound not so underground right now, but something, can you talk to us about the making of Big Pimpin', both in a sense of the song and then the video, which was kind of out of character for you guys at the time to sort of be part of that era, but it looked natural as shit. You guys didn't look like, you know, you felt uncomfortable sort of in this crazy Big Pimpin' scenario. But I'm so obsessed with the song. I just would love to hear anything that happened during the creation.
I've told this story a couple of times, but yep. What happened was we were basically sitting in the car, getting ready to go out of town. My phone rings. It's an unknown call. So I'm like, hello. And it's like, yo, what's up? I'm like, what's up? Yo, this is Jay. I'm like, all right, I don't know who this is, but don't be playing on my phone. You know, I don't have the minutes. Because back then, that's when phones was on minutes and shit. And I was like, yo, don't be playing on my minutes. I don't have time for this type of shit. And so Quimp was like, who's that? I said, somebody playing on my phone. And it rang again. And I said, hello. It's like, yo, fam, real. This is whole. This is Jay. I'm like, hold on a second. I'm like, yo, I think this is nigga Jay-Z for real. And Pimp, you know, Pimp was always very nonchalant. Shit, see what he want. Going back up, yo, what's up? What you want? He's like, yo, I got this song for my album, man. I think it'd be really good. And, you know, I knew Pimp would be hesitant about it because Pimp was originally supposed to be on just a week ago.
Oh. Mm.
A lot of people don't know Pimp C was supposed to be on just a week ago, but
wow,
Jay wasn't leaving New York because it was in the middle of the East Coast, West Coast beef. So Jay wasn't leaving New York. And Pimp was like, well, I'm not leaving the South, so I guess I ain't getting on the record. It was just that's just kind of how he was. He was like, I don't mind going out of my way for you if you don't, but if you're not going out your way, I'm not going out my way. So fuck it. And so anyway, I knew Pimp would not be big on this idea. So I was like, well, just send me the record and we'll see what happens. So back then there was no sending emails and files and whatever. They had to ship us the 2-track.
Yeah.
They had to ship us the reel of the record. So we go to the studio and listen to it. And it was the furthest thing away from whatever we had expected. I don't know what we were expecting, but it was not that beat. And Pimp was just like, I'm not rapping to that. I don't know what that is, but I'm not rapping to that. Like, you can rap to that, Bun B. I'm not rapping to that. I'm like, what's wrong? I'm like, it's different. He's like, no, that shit ain't different. That I don't know what that is. I'm not rapping to that, you know. I say, well, I'm going to rap to this shit. So I say, look, I'm going to New York. I said, I'm finna go be nosy. I want to see how Rockefeller doing it anyway. So
yeah, because you were a purveyor of the deal, and they had a great deal.
Yeah. I'm going to go up here and check it out. So I go to New York, you know what I'm saying? And I'm riding around with Hope and the Bentley, and I'm like, okay, fuck it. I'm getting on this record. Fuck that. I get on the record, I bring it back. I'm like, Pimp, you got to get on this record. This record is going to be a big deal. He was like, man, I don't know about all that shit, man. I don't know if I'm going to fuck with it. So at this point, I realized I got to use reverse psychology, which sometimes you kind of had to do. I was like, well, fuck it. If you don't want to do it, fuck it. We just won't do the record. All right, man, I do the shit. Fuck it. But I'm only going to do 8 bars and shit. I said, that's cool. No problem. Just get on the fucking record. Right. This shit's going to be a big deal. So he sends it back to me and I listen to it. I'm like, 8 bars. I'm like, this is like, I just rap for like 20 something bars trying to out rap Jay-Z, and this motherfucker just did it 8 bars. I send it back and I'm knowing they're not ready for this, and they send it back. They're like, yo, this is incredible. So at the time they were like, we're just going to save this record for the summer, you know, we'll come back to it, because they had big plans, I think, on the Mariah Carey record.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. That was supposed to be like a big single, and that shit didn't go like they thought it was going to go. And then in March, they was like, yo, we're going to do the Big Pimpin' video. Like, all right, cool. Yeah, we're going to go to Trinidad. Okay. Yeah, we're going to leave Friday. I'm like, all right, cool. I ended up forgetting that it was Friday. So Friday morning, I'm just sitting around the crib. I realized I missed my flight. I didn't even go. So that's why I'm not on the boat.
Right.
If you notice, nobody's on the boat but Jay and just Rockefeller right, people and on the Dame. Boat because I didn't fly over Friday.
Right.
So I fly over Saturday and they're like, yo, where's Pimp? I'm like, I thought Pimp was here already. Like, no, Pimp didn't get on his plane.
Mm-hmm.
So I call home. I'm like, where's Pimp? Pimp not going. Like, so the next day, Leo is like, yo, where's your brother? I'm like, he's not coming. Like, what do you mean he's not coming? This is a $1 million video. He's got to come. Huh. Like, he's not coming. He's like, I'll call him. He'll come. I guess they call him whenever he comes. Yo, what's wrong with your brother? Why is he not coming? Like, I don't know what to tell you. So we sat in Trinidad and we filmed for like 4 days. And every day I'm like, hype, yo, I'm ready to shoot. Well, we'll just shoot you when Pimp C gets here. I'm like,
hey. your room service bill is getting higher.
So the fourth day, I'm like, yo, hype, I'm going to be real. He ain't coming. Can you please just shoot something to me out here? So people would know that I was actually in fucking Trinidad. Because right, if you don't shoot something, I would never have any proof I was in fucking Trinidad. So we just pulled over the trucks in like some little park. They shot me in the park. We stood around for like 5 minutes, shot my verse. We got in the trucks and just said, fuck it. Came back. They booked a day at a mansion on the beach. So we get there at like 10 o'clock. Pimp's still not there. So we're shooting on the beach. Pimp pulls up in our trailer and Jay's trailer are about maybe 20 feet apart. So Pimp pulls up in the car with Glory Velez. He pulls up in Benz and pulls in between the trailers.
Oh, my
and
God.
They're like, yo, you. So the bodyguard is like, yo, you can't park here. You know, he's like, what you mean? Like, yo, this Jay-Z trailer right here. He's like, yeah, well, that's my trailer right there. And I'm right here. He's like, well, you can't park. Nobody parking right here. Like, well, I tell you what, I'm finna park right here. And if you got a problem with it, so next thing him and the security guard get into it, the big fucking deal, people talking about pulling guns and all this kind of crazy shit. We come from the beach, Jay come from the beach. 5 minutes later, he and the bodyguard are best fucking friends. You're like, yo, we finna get dressed. We gonna shoot with the car. Hype like, well, we want to get you on the beat. Pep like, nah, we finna shoot right here with this car. We finna get dressed. We be back in 5 minutes. They come out the trailer with mink coats on. He got no shirt on. You know, he's like, yeah, fuck it, man. We go to the beach right quick. So he goes to the beach. He does a verse on the beach right quick. It's like noon. We drink like fifths of Hennessy and champagne. The whole time, Dame's been drinking. Dame almost drowns in the video. Like, when you see him coming out of the ocean, he's like really almost drowned in the fucking ocean. And he lost like $1,000 pair of glasses, too.
I mean, was this your first instance sort of seeing this, like, and since we've talked about so many ridiculous deals, was this the first instance of you being involved in just this burning money of the early 2000s? Like, was this just shocking?
From my understanding, this was the first budgeted $1 million rap video.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I had never been a part of, you know, I think the biggest budget for any UGK video up to that point might have been 50, 70 grand.
Right, right, right. So which was the cost of the Damon Dash glasses.
Right, yeah. And exactly. It might have been wardrobe.
Yeah, yeah.
On this budget with June Ambrose dressing people. Yeah. So, you know, just seeing this whole level of, I've seen levels of excess in life.
Yeah.
But never within the context of the music industry. Like, this was a big fucking deal. Yeah. Like, Hype Williams was shooting the video. Little X was the cameraman. Yeah. Benny Boom was the first AD.
Yeah.
Like, it was, that's how major this thing was. You know, yeah. We spent 4 days in Trinidad. Like, you know, me, you know, like basically 50 people, yeah. You know, overseas. You know, they threw about at least 40, I want to say it was 40,000 in ones.
Oh, Jesus.
You know what I'm saying?
It's just it's a different time.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, like,
no, that shit don't even exist anymore.
No, I feel like the record industry wastes money in different ways now.
Yeah, now they just throw it away.
Wait,
yeah.
Wait, let's talk about another guy who got a huge deal. Drake. How did you end up having just the you got him, Drake? Yeah, I got him, Bun line on Drake's record.
Wow. That was an instance where we had recorded, I had actually recorded, like, Miss Me was originally my record. It was a record that Drake and I had recorded. And he thought that it was a good record, but that we could have done a better record. And he was like, you know, I want to try to do something better than that. And I was like, well, yeah, that's cool. We could try, but I think this one is still cool. He's like, nah, I want to try something better than that. So I was like, well, you know, well, cool. You can have that back. And then during the context of playing different songs from his album before Wayne went to jail, he played that one. And Wayne was like, well, what is that? He was like, well, that was something me and Bun was doing, but I don't know if we're going to use it. Like, well, yo, that's a hit record. You're crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. We got to do that one. And, you know, so that record ended up becoming that. But then my line because of the fact that he never changed his verse, my line in that verse remained in that verse, and it kind of carried over into the finished project.
Speaking of Wayne, did you ever have that conversation with him where it was like, hey, I don't really know that this styrofoam cup thing is really healthy, or, and I don't know if this is like a really good idea.
No, not at all. Because I had known people who had been drinking syrup as far as I was concerned, maybe 6-7 years before he even had his first cup. So there was no reason for me to just start like pointing people out and telling people what to do. I mean, you know, sure. He's a grown man. He knows the repercussions of these things. Mm. You know, he wants to live his life, and so be it. You know, he figured out, you know, when it was time to let go eventually.
Right.
As we all do. You know, I drank the shit. I drank it longer probably than I should have. I knew when to quit and I kept it moving, you know, but I can't start pointing fingers at people. Specifically for shit that I did.
Right,
know?
Right, right.
A little lighter subject. You're also one of the only rappers. Yeah. You're one of the only rappers I know who shouts out these streetwear companies, you know, Flight Club, or, you know, I know that you visit the Hundreds all the time and stuff like that. It's like, where are you exposed to those kind? Like, what are you checking up on? Why is streetwear sort of something that you've always been into?
Well, I mean, it's just, I end up having a lot of different friends that end up being in a lot of different places, and friends like, yo, come over here. Like, especially with, I heard you guys talking about 007 on here before, which fucked me up because I'd never known Chris by that name. Like, yo, what's up, 007? He's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, that's another Hot Carl story, yeah.
Did you, Bun, did you see him at the, Jeff and I ran into him at that Dom Kennedy event that Elliot threw.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah,
Chris is a great friend of mine. Chris and I have been hanging since Friend of mine, Joey Castillo, introduced me to him when he was still working at Echo.
Yeah, I remember that.
And this was back when Crooks and Castles was just in a, you know, like on the second floor, like over on top of the Hundreds over and on top of Flight Club. So I got to meet a lot of these guys in the early inception of a lot of these companies. And, you know, I was just, you know, they were like, yo, you know, if you ever like any of the stuff, you know, let me know. And I just ended up rocking and shouting them out because they were friends of mine. And I got to meet more people and getting to know more, you know, more of these different brands and just really just shouting out friends and just kind of just and. As my association with these people grew, so did their companies. I'm not going to say that I had anything to do with that because they were great brands.
It just
was a great coincidence.
No, Jeff will say it for you. Yeah, Jeff, go ahead. Jeff, you want to say it?
I mean, all these companies, they grew because of Bun B.
Right. And they
thank you, Jeff.
Yeah. They owe Bun a lot of money. Let's just put it that way.
So Bun's going to go get that money.
Yeah. Go get that money.
I'm good, man. People take very good care of me. You know what I'm saying? It's not about that. Like I said, a lot of these guys were going to be great regardless if I never, you know, if I never wore a Hundreds t-shirt, they were going to blow up regardless. And it's not like they were bums when I met them either. You know, let's be real. Just, you know, I just see opportunities to shout people out. And like I say, you have no idea how much just being acknowledged means to people. Cause everybody I know that I meet is always like, yeah, I used to rock with so-and-so, man, and he blew up and he shitted on it so bad. And he doesn't, you know what I'm saying? So I always feel obligated to do that type of shit.
Bun, was there ever the thought that maybe you would be a part, some part of Slaughterhouse? And is there a chance that you'll be on the new Slaughterhouse record?
I may be on the album, you know what I'm saying? That's always a possibility. But as far as a group, I think Slaughterhouse is great as a four-man team. You know what I'm saying? I love popping up with him, but... Hell, you know, who wouldn't? I mean, an incredible tandem of MCs. Totally. I just want to see this shit win, you know? But I know each of them individually. Some of them I know better than others, but I know them all individually. And I just, like I said, I just support real music.
Yeah.
You know? Obviously, we know you from so many remixes. And like you joked about, you're on 4 out of 5 rap albums. What are some of your favorite appearances? Like, what are some of the ones maybe that we don't necessarily talk about a lot, but that you hold really close?
Wow, that's a good question. Most people have never heard the original version of Players Anthem.
Mm-hmm.
The original version of International Players Anthem was UGK and 3-6 Mafia.
Right.
And we, you know, Paul and Juicy are like some of our best friends in the industry. And I feel like all the records we ever made with those guys were special, you know. But at the same time, there's a lot of records that we did with people that people didn't get to hear. Like UGK was on a remix for the Dirty South. Goody Mob single. The reason we didn't come out was because it was out of us and Mystical. Mystical had done a remix as well, and he was hotter, so they went with Jive, gave them Mystical instead of Barber. I'll tell you another story too, now that I'm not obligated to Jive anymore. Yeah. You remember the Sprite campaign?
Yes.
The hip hop Sprite campaign where they had all the different people.
Busta and Missy Elliott.
They put that campaign together by going to different regions and asking different people who they would want to see on TV. UGK was originally supposed to be on that commercial, but Jive told them that we wouldn't want to be a part of it. We were hard to work with.
Really?
Don't worry about it. Yeah. So they won't.
Shocking. Jive was a troublesome label. Shocking.
Yeah, but we were troublesome dudes. Like, you know, we had no problem. Like, you know, just to see Barry Weiss's face when Pimp C be like, "Yo, fuck you." You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're a bitch. Like, even though they wouldn't answer phone calls for another year, I mean, that kind of shit was priceless. Even though Barry's a good friend of ours, we apologize for all that shit.
you guys sound like you were competing with R.A. the Rugged Man for most disruptive at Jive.
I mean, if we lived in New York, it would have been a lot worse.
We
would always think of shit to do, be like, man, how are we going to get 100 rats? Like, that type of shit.
So it's a little more subtle than what 50 would do by throwing a television out a window or whatever.
But we felt like, you know, we couldn't be mad because we had bad deals. We just had to learn the business. Like, they just knew the game better than we did, and we just shouldn't have jumped out there like that without knowing what we were getting into.
Bun, deals-wise at Jive, what the fuck? Insane Clown Posse's deal was crazy.
Yeah, man, we used to just sit back and look at motherfuckers like, I can't believe everybody else at this label gets money. No, the craziest shit about our deal is that the attorney that we hired was a former attorney for Jive, and we assumed because she worked for the label that she would knew how to get in and make sure to get us a deal. All she did was cut a side deal for herself to proceed to let them fuck over us.
That's terrible.
Yeah, that's really fucked up.
Then, so then when we left that deal, we ended up signing with a manager that was worse than the situation we were already in. So oh we God. Jumped out the Bryant fan into the fight.
It's not some Billy Joel shit.
Yeah.
UGK has some of the... Oh, man, don't even get me started. If you can see my original contract and then the amendments, we're talking about easily 260-70 pages.
Oh my. Are you happy where you are at? You're under the Universal umbrella right now, right?
Yeah.
How is that working out so far?
So far, you know what I'm saying? Deal was done so fast and the album put out so fast after the deal that I didn't really get to use any of the real Universal resources.
Yeah. And you still got 5 mics.
I don't need Universal to contact blogs for me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
I can text these people and be like, yo, for the service of the record, you like it, post it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that eliminates that kind of shit. So I need a Universal to do the kind of shit that I can't do. Like, give me a 30-minute special on MTV if you want to promote me. Like, pull that string if that's possible. You know what I'm saying?
Is it worth it for you to actually have physical copies anymore? Or is digital something that you're sort of like intrigued by?
Oh, no, not at all. It's always good for me because I have a fan base. You know, my fan base, the UGK fan base, they're car people.
Yeah.
I still have a lot of fans that live by CD. They're not MP3 people because right. that's how they came into music. The same way that people who started listening to vinyl still have that love and affection for vinyl.
Yeah.
And Houston and the South is still very heavy in cars. It's still very much a car culture. So people still need that physical CD to put in the deck. You know, I still have problems with bootleggers on the street or whatever, but people are starting to get the idea that carrying and trying to sell fake CDs of Bun B, Pimp C, UGK is really not in your best interest. And it's really not a good move. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Financially or physically for that matter. And, it just can be crippling to have that kind of responsibility on you.
Did you did you know Slim Thug like well throughout his early years as well?
I wouldn't say well throughout, but yeah, I've known him. I've known of him since his early years, and I've known him as a friend for a long time.
So did he come to you and ask your impressions on his Interscope deal before he signed it?
No one ever does ask me about their deal before they sign it.
They heard about Jive.
But they should.
Yeah. I always tell people, don't talk to me, talk to a lawyer.
Right.
You know? I'm an artist, you know, I've signed fucked up deals. All I can't, you know, tell you what your deal should have and shouldn't have. I was still working out shit with my deal at the time. All I tell people is just make sure that you know what you're getting into and make sure you know your worth.
Right, right. Because Slim Thug is you know, seems to be doing all right. Seems to be doing all right before Interscope and seems to be doing all right after Interscope independently.
But that's because he connects with the people. Mm. Like, you got to go out and connect with the people, let the people touch you and see you and feel you and recognize you for who you are. Mm. And Slim Thug's done an amazing job of that throughout his independent and his major label career of being seen, like, in a very real, like, going to Miami on Memorial Weekend and Spring Fest Weekend and, you know, being in New York doing Summer Jam and things like that. That's critical for people to see you. And not just backstage, but in the crowd or, you know, walking through parking lots and stuff like that.
Sure.
You know who has not done a very good job?
Who's that?
Lil Flip.
Lil Flip has not done a good job.
No,
you'd be surprised. Lil Flip travels very extensively. Yeah, he does a lot of shows.
Really?
Always see him on Twitter all the time. He's always I see him in the airport. Usually when I'm coming home, he's flying out or vice versa. You'd be surprised.
I'm very surprised because I only see him on like World Star, like real estate commercials.
I don't watch World Star too much.
That's better. You're a better person than we are.
You are. Yeah.
I'm proud of you for that.
Most people I know that watch World Star, that's like all they do. So I'm very careful.
Yeah. Hannibal Buress was telling us that he's obsessed.
He is obsessed. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all he does.
Love seeing Hannibal Buress. I love watching Hannibal Buress, like the little cameos that he does on 30 Rock.
That's so good. He only plays that one character.
This, and then like last week, he didn't even say anything. He just threw up on the dude.
Yeah.
Shit was funny.
He is so good.
So good.
Really quick. Like, you know, someone we've talked about how you have this eye on the pulse. What's next, Bun? Who you feeling now?
Pause. I don't know, man. I really like, and I don't know how y'all gonna feel about it. I like Mac Miller. You know what
I like
saying?
Mac Miller. They don't. I like Mac Miller.
Look, I actually, you know who I really like now? Wiz Khalifa, and it's taken me a while to really like catch up to his whole catalog, but I really think he's really talented, and that whole movement, I don't smoke, I don't really, like, I'm not young like that anymore, but I see what they're going for, and that type of audience, that Mac Miller, that Wiz Khalifa sort of
rostrum.
Yeah, that, I mean, that rostrum audience really, they have something.
Taylor Ganger, kill yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
So I get it. I may not, you know, listen to his whole catalog, but I get it.
Are you hopping on the Mac Miller record?
Yeah, I'm on the album.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
nice.
4 out of 5.
There's actually like a video of he and I in the studio that just got posted like today.
Who produced that track?
I don't know. That's a track that he had.
Okay. Because I know he was in with Just Blaze, right?
Yeah, he was.
No,
I definitely
didn't rap the Just Blaze track. I've only rapped the one, and that was the track I did with Saigon.
Yeah. Man, you really are on everything.
Yeah, wait. By the way, Bun, your song with Freddie Gibbs and Mexicans with Guns is so good. I have to say that.
But isn't that the best name ever in the history of names?
That is. I want that tatted on my back.
Like, I don't know. Like, that just, I don't see why you couldn't like that. Like, Mexicans with Guns. Like everybody should love that shit.
No, it's
and
genius.
On the last record, you worked with one of my favorite producing teams, Justice League, and obviously Boy Wonder. There's a bunch of people on that last record. Is there anyone that you are still looking forward to working with producer-wise?
Course, you know, if you go down that route, you have to say Dre,
right?
Yeah,
definitely. I just, you know, finally got to work with Quick, which was a big deal for me.
That's great.
DJ Quick, I'm featured on that new album. The Book of David.
Yep.
That was a big deal for me. You know, I grew up on Quick, and you know, a lot of my early rhymes were usually written to the Quick instrumentals. Like, we would wait on the Quick album just to hear that, you know, not just the written stuff but the instrumental. I went on a Quick binge because you and Jonathan Mannion got to talking about it.
Yeah.
The other podcast. And I went and bought the High C album.
I love that album.
The AMG album.
Second to None record.
I bought the Second to None. If You Want It, it's like one of my wife's favorite records of all time.
I love If You Want It. I love that record.
You know what I'm saying? And that's a record. Like, and I just saw those guys like last year. I saw Second to None.
They tour a lot.
To Houston.
Yeah, they tour a lot.
They came to Houston with Quick on tour.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen those guys since probably 93. It was incredible. Wow.
Yeah, it's so funny. My father sold cars growing up, and every once in a while he'd have someone fun come in and buy a car from him. And Second to None actually bought a car from my father, and he came home with autographs from them, and they both were like, it was like the most corniest autograph. It was like, have a great summer. Like, I don't know if they were fucking with me.
And Jensen said that his father got pretty close with Swiss Beats as well.
Well, no, yeah, there was a really weird thing. Like, I had done, Swiss Beats, again, is sort of like Bun in a sense that he knew the legend of Hot Carl. Like, right. He knew that there was this kid with tons of money, and that DJ was willing to pay, you know, by the way, DJ Quick got paid $22,000 to work with me,
nice.
Just so you know.
Nice.
But there was another thing like that, you know, where it was like, well, we'll give you 50 grand to work with Carl, and it never worked out. But somehow Swiss ended up in the gallery, in the art gallery, and he bought something, and my dad was there, and Swizz was about to open a car dealership in the Caesars Forum shops.
Right.
And my father lived in Vegas, and they started talking, and then Swizz goes, and my father's like a 50-year-old Jewish man, and he goes, we'd love to have you come to the car dealership opening. And my dad was like, no, you don't. And he's like, no, I really would love for you to come. And my dad's like, I'm going to hold you to that. So my dad goes to the party the next day, the next night in Vegas, and he's at the front door, and he goes, I was invited by Swizz Beats, which just sounds like the fakest fucking thing you could say as you walk up looking like my father, who looked like a Chevy Chase clone. And he goes up and he goes, here to see you. And they go, oh, sure, whatever. And he goes, well, your name's not on the list. And, you know, that makes sense because he'd met him the day before.
Sure.
And so Swizz walks by literally at the same time, and he goes, oh, my God, from the art gallery, Larry. And my dad brought a date. Which is by far the greatest thing that's ever happened to him. In essence, he's best friends with Swizz Beatz.
Right.
And he lets him in the party, introduces him to Mary J. Blige.
Oh my
God. It was like the craziest story. It was almost like a bad Eugene Levy film. But
you know who does that for me? Mm. Kevin Lyles. Like, every time I'm somewhere and I'm having trouble at the door, like out of nowhere, Kevin Lyles walks up.
How does Bun B have trouble at a door?
Yeah, exactly, really.
What doors are you going to?
New York clubs, I tend to have problems at the door.
Really?
Yeah.
Just be like, yeah. Really? It seems crazy. They know about Milanakis' nickname for
him? Yeah, exactly. Crazy story. I'll keep it short. Yeah. Sonny, that used to be on the radio.
Yeah.
That does the cooking shows
yep,
now.
Yep.
Sonny had a birthday party, and invited us over, and I went to the party, and they wouldn't let me in. And True Life and his brother went bananas on the doorman, like screaming on him, like, "Yo, do you know who this is? This is a legend. This is the king of the dissident. You don't let this man in the door. You are disrespecting hip hop. You don't know." It was the craziest thing I had never seen anybody. I was like, "Yo, it's good. It's all right. Nah, son, you getting in this club? I don't care." And they were like, "Yo, please, just son, just come on in. Just come in. Just
oh
come
my
in.
God,
wow,
that's great."
And they wouldn't even let them in the club, but they were like, "You're letting this guy in." Like, they were more upset about them not letting me in than they were about them not letting True Life in. So shout out to True Life.
I mean,
It's funny. I had a similar story. There was a time that I was getting into clubs as Hot Carl, and I was and I saw Jose Canseco in like the far back of a line. And there's no one in the world that I am more obsessed with than Jose Canseco. I just think it's such a ridiculous career, and I like totally fell for it as a kid, and I made my dad pay $40 for his autograph, like a baseball card show. Like, I have a whole history with him, and I had the opportunity as Hawk Carl to go up to the door person, and I'm like, obviously they have not recognized Jose Canseco. You know, I feel the same way. I'm like, they obviously have no idea who that is. I'm going to go tell him. So I go up to the door guy, and he's like, "Hey, Carl." And I was like, "Hey, can you do me a favor? Actually, I don't know if you obviously don't, you're not a big sports guy, but there's someone in the line. It's really important that he gets in." And the guy looks at me and goes, "You mean Jose Canseco?" And I was like, "Yeah." Oh. He's like, "Dude, I have season tickets to the Dodgers. I'm not letting that fucking guy in. I know exactly who he is. He just doesn't get in clubs." So I was like, "Oh, never mind, bye." And I just like walked away.
First of all, Jeff and I never have problems getting into clubs in New York.
Obviously overall. Right.
No, actually, the one time where we really, really did have a problem, I forget what the club, which club it was, but we were with Todd Moskowitz and Joey IE, and I believe it was Joey's birthday, and the doorman would just not let him in. And Todd really? Almost, Todd almost.
Oh, it was the top of the Hotel Gansworth.
Yeah, and Todd almost had to say, "Do you know who I am?"
But then we got up and we like owned the place.
obviously. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen them dance, Bun. Have you ever seen Eric and Jeff dance?
I have not seen them dance.
I'm only bringing it up so that it has to be linked. That's when right. we put up this podcast.
I did not believe that they did that.
Oh, just wait till this podcast goes live, and you'll see the link that says "See Jeff and Eric dance."
They do not look like dancers.
Oh, wait till you see; they're amazing.
We're not exactly elegant. I would say that we do mean Harlem shakes, among other things.
It is, yeah, the Harlem shake.
No, you're not elegant in any
no, not at all.
Jeff is very good at dougieing and swag surfing, and I do good at all of it.
If there's a song with a dance, I do the dance.
I want to ask you guys a question because you know, you guys, I don't know you too much personally, but it seems like, from what I understand, and you've been in a lot of rooms with a lot of different people.
Yes.
But I do know the brothers, and I see them at almost any time I'm anywhere. What's the most obscure group of people in a room that you've ever been in?
Like, oh my God, I win these games.
Oh, no, I have a pretty good one.
Okay, you go first, because I got to think of mine.
I went to the 2005 Grammys with Kanye, which was his first Grammys. And I went to Clive Davis's party and was next to Steven Seagal. I bumped into Prince, like literally bumped into him. Chad Hugo was talking to Tracy Morgan before 30 Rock. So he was like in that in-between weird phase where he wasn't doing much. Robin Williams was there. This was like, it was like one of those like weird dreams that I have.
You're being impressive. You're being impressive. I was going to go obscure.
Dead serious.
Okay. I'm going obscure. I had a fan that was a celebrity that was shocking to me. Howie Mandel was a big Hot Carl.
that's really good. That's really good.
Yeah. So I ended up doing a meeting with him, and really? It was like
Did you bump fist with him or whatever?
Yeah, he doesn't shake hands. Right, that's all gimmick. Yeah, that's real.
Right.
He ended up doing a document. He ended up doing my EPK when the Headless Heroes album ended up coming out.
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. Super nice guy, but that was probably my most random what the fuck moment of like, what? Why are you a rap fan?
Jeff, do you have one or should we go to Bun?
I can't think of
that. Mine isn't really that good. Mine is Democratic Weekend in Denver. Me, The Clips, Moby, and Chevy Chase.
Wow.
that's like a bad Yahtzee of celebrities. Like, you just put you all in a cup and spit it out, and whatever comes out, just work on it. That's so crazy.
Actually, okay, here's the weirdest one.
Okay.
Eric and I went to a documentary screening this week.
Yes.
And it was us, Heather Graham, and Caroline Ray.
Jeez.
Wow.
But it was the only, it was only four of us.
Just you guys staring at each
just
other.
Just real quick about Swiss Beats, by the way. Last night we went to this there's this club in Hoboken at the W Hotel that had a 2-year anniversary party, and our friend David Cho got us into there, and Diddy and Swiss were performing, and Swiss went on first and had a 20-minute set, and it was all of his songs, just the hooks, and it was awesome.
I mean, it's almost like you curated it, because that's all you would want to hear.
It's classic. It's just brilliant.
I mean, but think about it. The Swiss Bees hooks are probably some of the highest points of parties.
Oh, no, yeah, no question about it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
What was your favorite one that he did?
Dance Like a White Girl.
No.
I would say probably Bring 'Em Out.
Yeah. Or On to the Next One was pretty big.
Yeah.
Oh, On to the Next One would be great.
No. You want to know what? When he went through the Rough Rider set.
Oh, that was the best. I'm sorry. That really rings true. Actually, you know what? You know who used to hang out in our town when we grew up, Bun? DMX, because there was a... first of all, he would always get arrested on the hutch. He would always be like speeding like tremendously and get pulled over by Harrison cops.
Right, but and he lived in like Mount Kisco or something.
Yeah, something like that. And there was a
model train shop.
No, model car, because he would race those little like RC cars, and and he would hang out with all these like white kids from you know like middle school or whatever, and buy them pizza next door. And he was just like a really nice guy to everybody.
Yeah, and every time that he would get arrested, all the kids from our high school would go down to the courthouse.
This sounds like the weirdest Pixar movie.
I mean,
like, this sounds like the weirdest. He was very nice. He'd always get arrested. Like, he was into toy model cars, and all the kids loved him. It's like, what the fuck is that?
It was exactly like Up.
Yeah.
Well, where I grew up, we didn't really have any famous people, like, driving around in Port Arthur. Like, for us, like, the only famous people from Port Arthur at the time were Robert Rauschenberg, who would down. He would come to Port Arthur once a year and would sleep in the museum. He would say that that's the only place he would sleep. He would make them... let him sleep in the museum.
Really?
Yeah.
Crazy.
That's awesome.
And Janis Joplin, who of course was dead, so she wasn't around.
Right.
If she was, that would be awesome.
And the sergeant from the Police Academy movie.
Which one? Which one? The sergeant, the one who's against Gutenberg?
No, yeah, exactly.
Oh my God, I love him.
And he came down and spoke. He came and spoke at graduation, but like the year before me, and it was like a really big fucking deal. Like, this is 1990.
This is what I dreamed the speech was. Okay, you ready? I'm gonna do an impression of what I wish it was. Tackleberry! Tackleberry! Just over and over again for 30 minutes. That's my dream of what the speech sounded like.
Oh my God.
And then
God.
Somebody, you know, kicks him in the ass or shoves something up.
And then the megaphone gets stuck to his mouth because it's glued.
Right.
Yeah, that's how the speech ends.
Bun, when you were growing up, was the, did you see any of the, did you watch any of the 30 for 30 series on ESPN?
Oh yeah.
What did you think of the Southern Methodist one?
Oh, SMU?
Yeah, SMU, yeah.
Oh, that shit was real.
Yeah, it was. Did they really like own the town like that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, we know people, you know, my wife and I, we were watching and you know, we were remembering different people from that time, and like, yeah. And especially when they were showing different kids getting bought different cars and stuff like that.
Yeah.
She was like, ooh, and she'd be like, damn, I remember when so-and-so and them all did have those brand new cars. And
yeah, Eric Dickerson.
Like, that was real. Like, football, I don't think people really realize what football is in Texas.
I watch Friday Night Lights, so I know, yeah.
I mean, it's serious business down here. For some of these people in these small towns, that's all they got. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And a lot of those people that play on these teams, they never really leave these towns in these areas. You know what I'm saying? It's very seldom you got one guy out of maybe 30 years of football that goes pro, and you know what I'm saying? And is actually known in the league, and, you know, actually does it kind of, you know, we had Jimmy Johnson is another person that's from Port Arthur.
Really?
The coach.
The guy from the Viagra commercial.
Yeah.
I know him.
One and the same.
Yeah.
So they started doing, they gave him a street. They gave him like Jimmy Johnson Boulevard, and they do like a big roast, and, you know, Emmett and, you know, all these guys came, Troy Aikman and all these different guys came down to our town. And, you know, it was a big deal because we never saw any of that kind of stuff in that little town. And, you know, that it was crazy.
Have you been?
Football was it. I mean, the whole city shut down, you know, just everything shut down just because football came to town.
Have you been to the new Cowboy Stadium?
Oh, yeah. I went opening day.
And is it everything it's cracked up to be?
It's ridiculous. It's the ninth wonder of the world. I don't know. I don't think anybody's like figured out exactly specifically what the official eighth wonder of the world is. Yeah. But that's the ninth wonder of the
world. It might be the Big Pimpin' video.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
It's when they say it's a $1 billion stadium, and you'd be like, yeah, right. Like, when you go in there, you can kind of walk around and start counting shit, and you can almost count the $1 billion.
Is it safe to say, Bun? Is it safe to say that stadium is the Hot Carl of football stadiums?
It is the Hot Carl. apparently it would be the Machine Gun Kelly.
There you go. Either way, it's still Jimmy Iovine Stadium. Bun, I want to thank you so much for doing this, dude. I mean,
yeah,
this is conceived this podcast, we sat down and talked about who we'd want on the podcast. I actually legitimately think our number one was Bun B. We appreciate this greatly, and the fact that you listen is still shocking, and the fact that you know about my failures in life is even more shocking.
I'm subscribed, so when the new things come up, they just pop up on the phone whether I want to listen or not. So,
Bun, well, thank you so much, so man. This is again legendary for us. Thank you so much. My name is Jensen.
I'm Eric.
I'm Jeff.
They're from Mitch the Bun. Beer, and that's Bun B, motherfucker. We just had Bun B on the podcast. Thank you guys so much. See you next week.
Take care. All right, bye.